Hi, I'm Libby.
And I'm Riley, and welcome to On the Come Up. You know what I've been thinking about?
What, girl?
How hard it is to navigate changing careers or changing your life path when you are such a young person.
Yeah, change at all. Change of season.
Oh, yeah. Change of literally anything is so difficult.
I'm done.
And I think especially like when it's so ingrained in our brains from such a young age to get on a path and stay on that path, I think it can be really scary to try and navigate change like that. But I think it's really important to share with people that you should always be looking for something that you want to do and that fulfills you and makes you happy.
Change could just be growth.
Yes.
Concept.
Change is growth. And there is no one better to represent that sentiment than our guest today, Jordan McQueary. Hi, Jordan.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks so much for joining us in the studio today.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Thanks for having me. I'm also excited.
I know it's fun. Libby and I both know Jordan through more of a theater context, and so it'll be fun today to kind of hear Jordan's professional journey and what they're doing right now, because they have gone through a huge change. So before we get to that, let's take it all the way back and give us a little bit of your background, like where you grew up and kind of like your life before you went to school.
Okay, yeah, so I'm from Toledo. I kind of grew up out further, and then as I got older, moved into the city. So I never stayed in a school for more than 4 years. But for high school, I was at Notre Dame Academy, great school. It was good education. I ended up hating Ohio as, you know, a child and a teenager, and was like, I don't care what I do, I just need to get out. So I ended up not applying for any schools in the state and ended up going to New York. And then after that, came back to Toledo and fell in love with it. Love it here now. Kind of needed to create my own life here that wasn't my parents.
Yeah.
Because my mom was, well, depends on who you ask if she's a big name in the city or not. But she was a pastor. And so I kind of grew up in her, not in her shadow, because that was never the situation or the case. But like everywhere I went, oh, you're Sharon's daughter. And I was like, yeah, that's me. And so it was kind of, I just needed to leave to figure out like who I was. So then I went off to New York for film school, and then I ended up coming back around COVID in like 2019, 2020. And then I've been here ever since. Went to law school, was an attorney for a little while, and no longer an attorney, which is, you know, I'm kind of giving away the game today. But that's me. I've got 2 cats. I love them.
I mean, let's get down to the priorities. Let's talk about your cats.
Yeah. They're both Siamese cats.
Oh, love them.
I'm curious how you went from film school to law school, because I knew about law, but I did not know about film. So talk a little bit about choosing both of those, and especially law.
And your time in New York, too.
Yeah.
I mean, because that's really exciting.
Yeah. So I went to Ithaca College, which is in Ithaca, New York. I went for screenwriting specifically. So it was a lot of writing courses, less production style. You know, these microphones are new to me. but I chose that pretty early on. And in high school, I did a lot of theater. I really liked like the production side of that. And I fell into movies. I kind of married the two, where I was like, oh, you know, I want to put, you know, stories together. I want to be a storyteller. But what medium would make the most sense? And I've loved movies since I was a kid. I watch them all of the time. And so I was like, oh, you know what, that's what I'll do. And I love writing and making movies. So I did that for undergrad. And that my intention was, after graduation, that I would move to Los Angeles. A lot of my friends moved out there, but I came home during that summer, kind of saved up money, tried to get a job in LA, didn't pan out, you know.
Sure.
Didn't go that well, which it really doesn't. It's kind of a networking city.
Yeah, I don't think anyone talks enough about how hard it is to get out-of-state jobs when you're applying out-of-state. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like a lot of people say, oh, just move the place that you want to go and then find the job, which is really scary, I think, not only for the change element, but also like the lack of security. Yeah. So I feel like there needs to be a better process for applying and receiving jobs when you're applying from out of state.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then also just like the change from from Toledo to such a major city.
Yeah.
Very, very different. And, you know, I'm glad that that didn't happen. But anyway, was ended up here in Toledo in 2020 and was trying to think of ways to make it out to Los Angeles in a more secure fashion. Knew I liked writing and had, you know, people my entire life, because I like to argue, tell me, you'd make a great attorney, you'd make a great lawyer. And so I thought more about that and came up with, okay, well, if I want to go out to Los Angeles and have a little bit of money and do something that I, you know, I'm still good at, that's still writing based or writing focused, I could pursue law, yeah. Go into entertainment law. And that's why I went to law school. That was my original intention. And then as those 3 years kind of progressed, I didn't end up doing that, which there, I have answers for why I didn't do that now. But then I really didn't have an answer for why I wasn't pursuing that. But that's kind of what pairs them is the writing aspect, yeah. Storytelling.
I like that's kind of like, yeah, taking your passions and the artistic side of what you're very like passionate about and involved in, and then having it in a more practical sense in a way, which is cool to be able to notice that and follow that.
Yeah, and I liked law school. I like what I learned. It was fun. The people I met, I wouldn't change my experience for anything. Glad I did it.
Yeah, was that a weird adjustment for you going from more of the creative writing side to then more of like the analytical legal writing side?
The writing wasn't even really the craziest part of it. The craziest part was being the more like artistic person, just presentation wise, and going to law school.
Yeah, I see.
It's kind of a crazy like example, but just kind of encapsulates the experience. When I first started in my first couple classes, because some of them were online, some of them were in person, but
would share also where you went to.
Oh, sorry, yeah, the University of Toledo, yeah. College of Law is where I ended up going. In the in-person classes, we had like a class of like 60, and I swear, like, no one had stickers on their laptops. And like, I would open my laptop and it's full of just like crazy, I collect them. So a bunch of stickers on it, and like wearing colors to class. Mm. By the time I graduated, there were a lot more of like the 1Ls, the younger students, that were a little more free flowing and creative and expressive. But my class, like, I feel like I was a fish out of water. Like, I was very, very different from a lot of people.
Sure.
Now I found out that, like, you know, once I get to know them, that it's just because they kind of hide it. They were hiding, they're being professional, public facing, but then once you get to know them, they can be fun.
Professional whimsy. Let me tell you what.
Yeah, yeah. It would make it a lot better experience, both in school and in the office, if people were a little more relaxed in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, I did well in law school. Like, I liked it. It really wasn't hard, except for that it's hard. And so, yeah, did that answer your question?
Yeah. Okay. And I want to talk a little bit then about after graduating law school and where you were at, just like with what you wanted to do then and what you did end up doing with that.
Oh, yes. Law degree. Yeah. So like I said, like I went in thinking I would do entertainment law. I left not really sure what I wanted to do, but even when I graduated law school, like, I knew I didn't want to be an attorney. So when I was applying for jobs, I was looking for things that were not practice, like they didn't require the license.
Mm.
But still I was able to use like the skills that I had, that I had gained through that experience. In undergrad and in law school, was pretty big in the advocacy spaces, specifically for like queer LGBTQ advocacy. In 2019, I interned at GLAAD. That was my first like foray into the nonprofit space. Really liked that. Ended up, while I was at law school, kind of the organization already existed, but it had died because it was students. Kind of rebirthed the Outlaw, which was the gay student organization, and did some really cool work there with some ongoing clinics that the students still get to do, because I started them. I started a drag show while I was there. I hope they still do that. I don't know if
they do still do that.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, I wasn't sure if they would be able to do it this year or not, but I think it's their fourth or fifth year.
That's awesome.
Which is great. Yeah, it's great. And so anyway, so I have that background as well. And so when I was graduating law school, I was looking for things in the area, and I had the opportunity to work for an LGBT nonprofit here, Equality Toledo. I did that for about a year, and that was lots of fun. I learned a lot in that as well. One of the things that I learned, which I probably should have known already, but you know, you've got to keep trying before you finally come to this realization. But advocacy for me personally, this is not true for everyone, but advocacy for me is something that is like very personal and should not be my source of income.
That's interesting.
If that makes sense. Kind of like using the community that I'm a part of for myself, which this is not the topic of conversation for today, but I have a lot of opinions when it comes to nonprofit spaces who runs them and why they're there. But it was a cool experience. I'm proud of having done that and the work I was able to do for ET while I was there, and that allowed me to do a little legal work while I was there as well. Again, and similar to what I did at the school, doing some like name change clinics and some other more like simple paperwork administrative law things for the queer community at a affordable rate/free, which is hard to come by.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So that was cool.
And I think there's something really important there, which a lot of people try to take the thing that they're passionate about and turn that into their job, which for some people, it works out really well. But for others, I think it's really important to have the separation between your passions and the things that you really want to do versus, you know, I'm taking this and using it to make money for myself and then I get burned out, or I, you know, I'm doing it now for the wrong reasons because it's financially based. So talk a little bit about like tips for people to kind of separate those two things, or you know when they should pursue something as a career versus when they should keep it kind of as a passion. What separated that for you?
Oh, that's a good question. I think I don't know if I could come up with any like advice for whether you should or shouldn't do it. I think it's worth a try. It's really rewarding to have the thing that you're passionate about, the thing that brings you joy, also kind of bring you fulfillment in the more like the nitty gritty of life, paying your bills, like if you do, like having the both of those spaces be the same thing can be helpful for a lot of people, and like I said, be very rewarding. The important thing I would say is, and this goes for everything, it wouldn't just be if it's like your like identity base, because I know that's what we were talking about. Separate yourself from your work, which is hard to do. Mm-hmm. But keeping up that barrier. So if you are going into a space that's like, yes, this is my passion area and my focus, make sure that like you're still able to do those things or have that space for yourself on the side. So if it's art, for example, and you are fortunate enough to be like a graphic designer, and that's what you're doing in your day job, that's awesome, that's great. But make sure that like if art is what you know you use to relax and have fun at the end of the day, that you still have the space and the bandwidth within yourself to carve out that time and make that art for yourself.
Yeah.
I would also say like having the community of people that are separate from your work communities is a good way to keep those things separated as well, just so that you don't kind of lose yourself in the pursuit of the paycheck.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great advice. And then moving out of Equality Toledo, your next job was at Middleton Law Office. Is that true?
Yeah. I helped with some other attorneys, like solo practitioners in the area, but then my first like a formal job was Middleton Law Offices. Yeah.
Yeah. So tell us about that. What was your day to day like there?
That was cool. You know what? I actually really with the exception of not wanting to be an attorney, I enjoyed it. I worked in, they do probate administration and estate planning. And so it's really awesome to get to work with clients in a, it's still rigorous and it's still difficult subject matter, but it's a little bit easier on your heart than something like a criminal law or a family law might be. It's really cool to kind of walk with clients and be with them at points of loss in their life. A lot of times people that we are talking to have never spoken to an attorney and someone has just died. So now they're like, we're here. Hi, I'm here. I don't know anything about this. I just know that I have to go to the court now because I have to handle this. And it's a cool space to meet people in. And I found myself pretty good at that too, which is why it took me a little while to leave. But it was interesting. And estate planning is cool as well because like you get to like really build relationships with people. You don't, it's not just a one and done, or it's not just like, hey, I need you for this one issue. It's an ongoing process because like your family is always changing and your goals are always changing, and so you're able to like grow with the clients, which was neat to see. And I got to meet a lot of clients that were already with the firm before I started, and then also like get my own clients for the firm, which was cool.
Yeah.
It was one time someone came in and I had just had like one meeting with them, but they liked us so much that they came and brought like this huge bouquet of flowers from their home garden just for us, just for the office. And it was gorgeous. They were gorgeous, like huge peonies falling over because they were so big.
Well, and you're talking about building these relationships and, you know, working with these clients. I feel like when you're thinking about the lawyer space, you don't often think about the quote unquote bedside manner necessary for that type of space, especially when it comes to this type of handling people's estates and handling people during loss. So did you find that you had to kind of work on your own approach in bedside manner when you took this on, or were you prepared for that right away?
So I definitely, it was a learning curve. I had to figure out what works and what worked and what didn't, and everyone's different. So right. Like one response could go over really well with one person and just not be the thing that you should have said for someone else. But I also, you know what? And I was talking to my sibling about this too, because, you know, like I said, my mom is a pastor, and right now she's not a pastor anymore. She's a chaplain in the army. But a big portion of that was being the minister for funerals or like experiencing church, the church community and a lot of people like passing away and that, and getting to watch my mom navigate that with people really taught me a lot. And so I think, and it just like personal experience with grief and loss in my life, I've had a lot of it. And so that was an area, a practice area that like, you know, if I was going to stay and be an attorney, that was the area that it would have worked in. That just like it felt like it came pretty natural for me.
Right. Yeah.
So then obviously we got the little spoiler alert earlier that you did transition out of this job. So talk a little bit about making that decision. Why did you decide that you didn't want that job anymore? And, you know, what was kind of your next steps once you made that realization?
Yeah. So I took the job with the intention of like it would be a great way to pay my bills and keep work at work and then come home and have free time to do the things that I actually wanted to do and actually wanted to pursue. But I, at least me personally, I don't know about you guys, but like I'm kind of an all or nothing thinker. So if I'm going to do the job, I'm going to do it well. And in order to be an attorney and do that well, it's a lifestyle. It's the thing that you are and the thing that you do. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I was able to come home sometimes, and write and come up with ideas. But for the most part, like I was just exhausted from having to put so much effort into the daily work of it.
Yeah.
Right. That I got really sad and it, you know, I wasn't pursuing the things that I told myself I would pursue, having taken the job. And so after I saved up like a good amount, I thought about it more And I decided, you know, if there's one through line through my career, that isn't trial and error, because that's another through line, it is like, you know, I know what I wanted to do, but for whatever reason, be that, you know, anxiety is the reason. But like, knowing what I wanted to do and then not just taking the direct path there, but like trying to like work my way around it. Well, like, oh, this is where I want to get, so I can just take this path this way and then somehow, some way end up over there. That wasn't working, and it hadn't worked for a long time. And so, it, like I said, if I want to do something, I need to do it. And so, and just conveniently, the way that your license works as an attorney, you have to like re-up it every year. You got to pay. And so, at the same time that I was thinking about whether or not I wanted to stay in the legal field, was also when I needed to. Reapply for my license and pay $400 to $500 to do that. And
if that's not a sign,
yeah. So I was like, you know what, this is the sign to just take the jump, take the leap, rip the Band-Aid off. And so I said, let's do it.
And so originally you talked about wanting to go to LA and work in screenwriting and doing all this stuff. So did you leave this particular job to focus more on that dream? And if so, how has that kind of shifted since you originally had that dream out of your undergrad?
Yes, I did. I quit knowing that I'm going to be pursuing film. The difference is, I would say that I have less of the Castle on the Hill vision of Los Angeles, right? Of like, well, if I want to be in film, if I want to do this, then I have to go there. Like, I need to be in that city, which is absolutely not true. In fact, you should probably have a harder time in that city than you would anywhere else. And thankfully, serendipitously, you know, I came back to Toledo, which has like an up and coming, really cool, independent, like local film community and scene. And so after I left my job, I was like taking steps on like a personal level, like writing a lot more. I'm working on a script right now that I'm hoping to get grants and like actually make into a movie here. But then also like taking the steps and doing the scary thing of networking in Toledo and meeting people around here, going to like the screenwriter meetups and talking to some of the people that own production companies, just to see, you know, what they know, because they know a lot more than me, and build, you know, those relationships to see what I can make here. And then outside of Toledo, I have like already done scripts and they're just scripts. So yeah, so screenplays and like TV pilots that I've submitted to some like contests just for feedback. To try that side of things too, but it's an exploration.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. And you mentioned being scared to network, which is so real. I think everyone has that fear. I was also wondering if there's any like other, what is, you know, kind of the scariest part then of making that leap out of that role?
Well, outside of just like the sense of security that being in the professional space brings, trusting myself, like, and that is, like I said, it's been like the thing that I've needed to do this whole time that I just have been scared to do. Mm-hmm. And so coming into the space of like, hey, you've got this, you can do it. You just need to do it. Like getting out of my own way.
Yeah.
Is the most important thing, but also the scariest thing, because I'm really good at being in my own way, and it's weird to not stop myself.
Aren't we all, my friend?
Yeah,
aren't we all?
I think that's definitely something everyone can relate to.
Right? And I know we're still in the early stages of this transition, but talk a little bit about what has been for you the most rewarding part of making this hard decision.
Feeling like myself for the first time in a very long time is probably the most rewarding. Like, I am excited about my days and like what I'm gonna do with my time, so that's been awesome. And like outside of me, but it goes with like feeling like myself again, talking to other people and like actually being excited about the things that I'm talking to them about and what I'm doing, Everyone thinks it's really cool that you're an attorney and they want to talk to you about that. But it's like, yeah, as an attorney, it's great. But then they're like, well, what do you do now? And I'd be like, well, actually, I'm working on this movie. Can I tell you about what? Can I tell you about it? It's been a lot of fun. I like it a lot.
I love that. Yeah. I also feel like between this podcast and having Nick Bartlett on, we should give the PSA that we do support lawyers on this podcast. If you want to be a lawyer and you're excited about it. You know, we had Emily Hoffman on talking about how she loves her animal rights advocacy and all of that stuff through her attorney license. Yes. But we also very, very much support following your dreams and doing what's right for you. So we're glad Absolutely. That you're talking about it. And in that vein, too, obviously, making this jump means that you have to, in the interim, find ways to kind of support yourself through this. So what are you doing and what steps are you taking to support yourself while you're pursuing your dream?
I'm going to be a barista. I'm a barista now,
which yeah.
is awesome. Yeah, so I was a barista for 8 years before law school, and halfway through law school, I stopped doing that because I had to clerk to go through the steps of attorney work. But I was a barista all through undergrad, in between school. I love it. I love making drinks. I love talking to people and like the regulars. It's a lot of fun. I like moving around as opposed to a desk job as well.
Yeah.
But that's what's paying my bills, if that's what you were asking.
Yeah. Well, just because we obviously think that it's really admirable that you're making this jump and doing something that you love so much, but we definitely want to find ways to convey to our other young professionals listening, if they're thinking about making this jump, what are some steps that they can take to kind of, you know, get that started and feel some sense of security in that transitional phase.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I saved up a lot of money before I decided to do this. And part of the intent was, my hope was that I was going to have a job when I quit the one I had. Mm-hmm. Don't do what I did. Don't quit your job if you don't already have one lined up. That's probably not a good idea. But yeah, you know, you think a lot about it, and there's like the emotional side of things that to think about. Obviously, like, is this what I want to do? Is this not what I want to do? Who am I? All of those things. But then, as you're thinking about those things, if you want to make that change and you want it to be successful, more than just like trusting yourself, you need to do your research. You need to put the time in. Make a plan, like a plan that will work for you. For me, that was, again, like I said, saving up a lot of money and knowing how much I needed in order to last a certain amount of time, what I could put aside to, like, you know, apply for those contests or buy equipment or like do anything that I needed to do in the meantime before I get the opportunity, before like pursuing like getting funding and getting paid through the art side of it, because that doesn't happen immediately. But yeah, I would say like, really like plan it out. I would also say have someone in your like corner, like have someone to talk to that is, whether that's your therapist, that's a therapist or a friend or someone, but like have someone that is going to listen to you, but not just be like, that's a great idea. Like have someone that's like going to help you work through it. Don't do it alone. Someone that could be like, hey, well, have you thought about this? Or like, that's probably not a good idea, maybe this, so that there's a dialogue there outside of your own mind.
Yeah, I feel like if it hasn't hit home yet, it should by now, that support systems are crucial no matter what industry you're in.
Absolutely.
We talk about that a lot with our guests on here.
Yeah.
I guess, too, I'm just, from your perspective, if someone else, another young professional, was feeling the same way you were, would you say go for it?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, you only live once. Also, young. Like I'm 28, and I'm so young. And I have to remind myself that every day, that, like, I have so much life to live. And, you know, what even if I was, you know, I had said, you know, I pursued law school, and I wanted to be an attorney, and I stayed in it, when I'm 35, that still might not be true, right? Like you never know what's coming next. You can plan for everything and still be surprised. And so, yeah, go for it, because it's why not?
And you didn't think we'd leave without a Roman Empire.
No way.
So you know what? Today, I'm going to have Libby kick us off. Libby, what is your Roman Empire today?
So what I cannot stop thinking about is how this girl on TikTok, of course it's on TikTok, referred to fast food and other like highly processed foods, which we know are bad, we know, but it's tasty and I love it. But she referred to it as pre-chewed food. Oh. And I can't stop. And she explained the whole science of it, how it's basically like the softer the food is, the more it tricks our brain into thinking that we need more of it because we're expecting the nutrients and it doesn't ever come. And so we keep eating more and more. And the way that foods like Pringles, they fit on your mouth, the way they're curved to hit every single taste bud. And like it does, like it kind of just crumbles. Even like crunchy food kind of just crumbles and disintegrates in your mouth. So now every time I eat, that's what I'm thinking about. And it was great. I mean, she explained it all. And it's like I kind of already knew, like obviously no, it's not great for you, but your body is just like eating until it fills the nutrients, but it never comes.
Pre-chewed food.
Pre-chewed food.
Oh, that scares me so bad.
So, sorry if I ruined anyone's days. still get your burger. I will.
Yeah, for real.
But
still
I just
eat your pre-chewed food.
I can't stop. I'm like, oh, pre-chewed.
That is wild. If I hear you say that at home, I'm going to freak out.
No, I haven't been saying it out loud, but no, in my mind, that's what's going on.
I will know. I would like to talk about how... my cat, who I've talked about before on this podcast, is my favorite in the entire world. Favorite thing, pet, person, whatever. I love my cat so much. And little Miss Ziggy gave me such a scare last week because I got a text. Libby was home from work one day and she texted me that Ziggy was limping on her left paw. So Mama Bear kicked in and I was like, okay, what do I need to do? Do I need to come home? Do I need to quit my job? Like, how can I support
my
cat?
She was okay, by the way. She was still actively playing, pouncing on us. Like, she was happy.
She was fine, just like a little limping. And so it was her left paw. So I make an emergency vet appointment. I take her there. They're like, we're not going to do the x-rays because they're like $500 and we don't think she needs that. So just give her this medicine. And if she's not better by Friday, then bring her back in for the x-ray. So I say, okay. I take her home. I give her her first dose of medicine that night. The very next day, I wake up and my left arm is like immobile. I cannot lift it up higher than maybe like my waist level. And it felt like I had pulled a muscle or something in my shoulder, but I hadn't done any rigorous dancing or lifting or anything like that. I literally just woke up and could not move my left arm. And I thought to myself, how crazy is it that I'm having like sympathy pains for the love of my life, little cat Ziggy? Happy to report that both Ziggy and I are okay. Both of us can move our left arm and paw respectively, and we're having a great time. So yeah, I'm really glad that both Ziggy and I are okay. But that was really funny that my Mama Bear kicked in so hard that I was having sympathy
pains. You had to just
transfer
the pain from her.
Yeah, literally. So you're welcome, Ziggy. I love you. I would take your pain away if I could, and I probably did. All right, Jordan, finish us off. What's your Roman Empire?
So I watched a movie recently that I need to tell you about. Well, I don't need to tell you about the movie necessarily, but this information about. So I watched it because my sibling is in disability studies. And I'm doing like a watch horror movies, like a challenge for the month of October. Mm-hmm. But I watched this movie called Freaks from 1932.
Mm.
And it is like a horror drama, but it's not a horror. The only reason really that it was like slated as a horror film at the time was because it features a lot of people with disabilities.
Yeah.
It's set in a circus. And one person, like one able-bodied person is tricking one of the other circus members into marrying her for his money. And then all of his friends like get her back for that because they see right through her. But the reason this is a Roman Empire is because not only, it was 1932, it was pre-Hays Code, so that's why it was able to be made to begin right. with. But I learned after the fact that a lot of the actors in the movie weren't even allowed to like be on the studio property. Like they had to be, they had to stay off the studio lot. Purely on the basis of their disabilities, which is crazy.
Yeah.
But also, this movie is only 60 minutes. They shot and filmed a 90-minute film, like an hour and 30-minute film. And the studios forced them to cut it down to 60 minutes. And the remaining 30 minutes of it, I can do math. Yeah, the remaining 30 minutes of the movie are gone. They no one can find it. Like it's like it was all destroyed. So no one will ever see the rest of this film. And what the thing is that it's so good. Like I would have loved to see the other 30 minutes because it's really compelling, a really compelling drama. But we'll never know. We'll never know what happened in the last 30 minutes of that.
Y'all can't see that me and Libby both have jaws on the floor right now. But
that's so
what?
Awful.
Yeah, there's so much to unpack there. My goodness. That is horrible, but I'm glad it was a good movie at least.
Oh, yeah, you should watch it.
Yeah, okay.
It's very good.
I'm just thinking, like, I'm surprised that they use people with actual disabilities.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then also, at the same time, made them not be on set. It's kind of strange.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Well, very strange.
Yeah.
But it's
and
not
horrible.
Making sense. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't think of his name, unfortunately. But the director, the writer and director of it is the guy who did Bela Lugosi's Dracula.
Oh, wow.
Really big name. Put this movie out, destroyed his career. But it's an awesome movie, so you should watch it. You should go find it.
I'm so like torn right now. Like,
horrible practice, yeah. High recommendation though. I got you. Yeah, we'll check
Makes
it
sense.
Out. Well, Jordan, thanks so much for joining us today. We were so happy to chat with you about your big transition.
Well, thank you for having me. This was fun.
We want to thank Jordan McQueary, our guest on today's show. We're your hosts and producers, Libby and Riley, and our executive producer is the stupendous Chris Piper.
If you have any questions, comments, or you just want to listen again, go to wgte.org/comeup or wherever you stream your podcasts.
Bye, besties!
WGTE. Voices around us.